you don't fit in the regular box as far as a writer for Playboy, Mel Magazine, doing stand-up comedy. It seems like you've angered some feminists over time.
I guess so. I don't know why. I would say that, you know, I believe in the basic principle of feminism as equality, but I think it's just kind of taken on a life of its own into some new directions.
And what directions do you think those are, particularly where, you know, some women are split even within, I guess, the feminist box, some saying, like, I don't want a door open for me, and there are other women saying, yes, I'm all for equal rights, but I still enjoy a little chivalry.
And there seems to be kind of an overwhelming hatred of men that I'm just not okay with that either. I don't think it's helpful. I don't think it's helpful to go from, hey, guys, maybe there are some things you can reflect on and work on, to, you know, all men are garbage.
You know, and as all guys on this show, what is it? Seriously, I mean, it's one of those things, Bridget, where I want to be able to look in the mirror and say, okay, as a collective, men, what can we do better as far as just guys and the way we treat women?
I see this a lot, and I'm in a 12-step program, and men ask me this a lot because I see men being somewhat creepy with women who might be new in sobriety or in any environment. And I think men holding other men accountable is important. Saying to a guy, if you see him making a woman uncomfortable, saying, hey, buddy, that's not okay. I see a lot of women complaining about men white knighting, you know, sticking up for, if somebody comes after me online, I have no problem when men are taking other men to task. I think that that is your responsibility as men to hold each other accountable and call each other out when you see misogyny.
Would it be safe to say then, as a guy, that, you know, we all know knucklehead guy, and then there's totally meek and mild guy that's going to say, is it okay if I kiss you? And it seems like you're looking for something in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, that's tough too. And I feel, and I think I was talking to Ben about this, it does feel somewhat generational. I'll be 40 in a couple of weeks. So I fall right in the middle of, I feel like, the generation that just doesn't get it at all, and the younger generation, where a lot of young women have been my teachers, and they've taught me things about consent and made me aware of stuff that I've put up with, just because I'm not going to fight every single fight. But some of the younger women are saying to me, like, hey, just because you put up with every guy that grabbed your butt in a restaurant when you were waitressing doesn't mean that we're okay with that. So some of it is generational, in the younger generation that might be more normal for them, the consent culture and asking, can I kiss you? That might be what their expectation is and what they want. And I can't really speak for them, although I do think what ends up happening is everyone becomes so awkward and scared and paranoid about something that's already awkward and scary and paranoid, especially when you're in those years, in your teen years, that they're kind of just opting out. And statistically, there's less sex in the younger generations than ever before. And I think a lot of this is technology, but I also think it is just this thing that's already so fraught with insecurity now has this added layer of, it's already so confusing when you're young, especially, and you're trying to navigate this. And then if you add, well, I'm afraid to even make a move because I might ruin my life. might be ruined. It adds, and these are things that have traditionally, throughout time, that this is, there are stories written about the awkwardness of teen love and young love and young sexuality. That's what being a teenager, we have to, within this movement, I understand it's important, but there needs to be some kind of, we have to build in for error and exploration and learning how to read one another's cues that are nonverbal, and there's so much unspoken stuff that happens, and the fact that men have a lot of pressure put on them to be the aggressors, and women want that in some respect, and they're taught to have that. There's still a lot of cultural messaging saying, hey, ladies, do you want a guy who's going to take charge? But now there's a lot of cultural messaging that's saying, no, that's not good either. So, like you said, where is it? What's the middle ground?
Yeah, it's interesting, Bridget, because I was talking to my 19-year-old daughter, okay, and which is a weird kind of conversation, but I think it's that's a good conversation to have with your daughter. And it was just, as the expectation, you're dating someone, you like him, do you expect him to ask you, is it okay if I kiss you? And she was like, no, he should know, that's okay.
Well, I had a funny conversation with my Uber driver on the way to LAX the other day, and he was saying, he's like, when I lean in for a kiss, if she backs away, she doesn't want a kiss, and if she leans in, she wants to kiss. And he's like, why are we overcomplicating this? This is stuff that seems like, and in some respects, I worry that we are overcomplicating something that's already complicated. I love my job for writing. I love writing about sex and relationships because within sex is everything. It's life, it's death, it's shame and fear and feelings of elation and feelings of love and feelings of, it's everything. It's all encompassing. But within that, when you're trying to take something like sex and make it mechanical, I mean, they have apps now, consent apps, and you can't do that. We can't turn something as basic as human sexuality into something that is, you walk through it step by step, like getting like a video game it's so weird to me. I feel like we're overthinking something that comes very naturally. And part of that natural evolution is going through those confusing, awkward teen years.
Yeah.
Where you're all hormonal and you're snapping each other. And my bra used to get snapped. And now that would be complete, the kid would get expelled. But it was back in my age, it was just preteens being, hormonal and rambunctious.
Right. Yeah. And I don't want that for my daughters. I want to see that change, but then it feels like it does take that step too far. And I'm paraphrasing, something you said before of, if a guy asks, to kiss me, I'm probably going to laugh at him.
Yeah. I really am thinking of just going on the road and talking to teenagers about this because I'm very curious to know what I've talked to my nephews, they're boys, about it, and they don't seem, my nephew has a girlfriend, and it seems like a totally normal high school relationship. So I'm wondering how much of this is coming from graduates from like liberal academia, and is it being overblown because those are the people who are writing the blog? Traditionally tend to be these college kids from academia, and they're right out of the gates, and this is the world they came, they studied gender studies and whatever, or is this something that's pervasive all across America? I still can't really, I don't have a very good read on that. It seems like it's everywhere, but is it everywhere?
See, I think that's a great question, Bridget, because it does seem like when we're seeing, different pieces that are written, especially on the coast, that we'll ask ourselves within the show, do you know anyone like this? And a lot of times
no.
The answer is no, I really don't.
No.
Exactly.
No. I don't actually think that the majority of America is being spoken for at all across the board on all topics in general anymore. I think the extremes have taken over, and they have the mic and it's better television and better, you know, it's better entertainment to have these extremes fighting. But I would say 80% of Americans feel much more nuanced than our media would lead us to believe about everything.
So true. We're talking with Bridget Phetasy. And Bridget, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you specifically about your sobriety.
Because
I quit drinking 10 years ago.
Congratulations.
Yeah, you too. And
I just had 5 years on Thursday.
And I know that you had said it was the best gift that you had ever given yourself. Could you expand on that a little bit? Explain that to people.
Yeah, I talk a lot about this on my podcast, which is on Ricochet, and I'm going to plug it because I want people to listen to it. It's all about grit and what people have overcome, internal and external resistance. So last week, for instance, I interviewed Jeff Garland, and we talk a lot about a lot of people who come on. We talk about sobriety and stuff like that. It's called Walk-Ins Welcome. And I always knew, I think from the very beginning, I think right when I started drinking, I knew I would probably have issues with it. And then by the time I was in 19, I was in rehab, but then that was for harder drugs. So then I just kept the harder drugs out and still continued drinking and smoked me weed. And I reached a point where I felt like it wasn't like anything major happened. It was just like I felt like I was getting in my own way. And it was something that I felt I could control. It was, I have very little control over what goes on in the world around me. I can control essentially my habits and my reaction to the things that happen in my life and in the world around me. And that seemed like one area where I could make a very big change, and it would have very positive, it would just be a positive overall effect in my whole life. But I had no idea how positive it was going to be on all levels, financial, spiritual, emotional. I just didn't, I knew it was getting in my way, but I had no idea the extent that it was getting in my way.
You know,
and ruining relationships and et cetera.
How many months were you sober when, and I don't know, maybe you didn't have this feeling, but it was like you didn't have this negative thought about the world in general so much. Did you experience that?
I for me, the first 2 years were really hard. And I'm not sure if that life kind of handed me a lot of challenges that I had to overcome sober. I'm not sure how much of it was because I was using weed as an antidepressant for most of my life, and I quit weed when I quit drinking. So I think that I was a little bit depressed. And then around 18 months, 2 years, I started feeling really optimistic about life. And in general, it was like my brain rewired. I think because I started drinking and smoking weed so young that it does chemically do something to your brain. They've done many studies on this. And I felt like I was going crazy when I first quit drinking and smoking weed. And I think it was because my brain was forming new patterns and rewiring. And I have just an overall sense of well-being now about things and my ability to handle situations. And I tend to skew towards I wake up with the same kind of alcoholic brain of like, oh no, I'm like, everything is awful. But I now wake up and pray and I meditate and I have a lot of time to volunteer and do things where I'm of service. And I think when you do those things, the world doesn't look as bleak as when you're in a cycle of addiction or self-destruction. And we can still self-destruct in sobriety, but I at least have many tools to kind of counteract that.
I think your story is fascinating, and your
Thank
voice
you.
And opinion is one that's much needed. So when I that heard you, I'm like, Anna, if we can talk to Bridget, that would be fantastic, and I so much appreciate you taking the time. I want you to go ahead and plug
Anytime.
All of your stuff, because you do a lot of different things.
I do. Right now, I'm really loving my podcast. It's pretty new, so we're only on episode 4, Walk-Ins Welcome on Ricochet. I'm all over the internet in terms of writing. I write for everyone. I'm pretty independent politically. So you can find me on the New York Post, or you can find me on the New York Daily News, or you can find me writing about sex and relationships on Mel Magazine. I have a column there. And then I'm doing, honestly, Twitter is the best place to find everything that I do. I have a Patreon where you can subscribe, and I write there. So, but if you follow me at Bridget Fetisi on Twitter, you'll be able to, I promote everything through there, and I live on Twitter.
Fantastic. So. Bridget Fetisi, appreciate it so much. Yes, I hope we can do
Thank
it again.
You.